And we are on air right now for Fan for Racing's Kansas NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off here on Fan for Racing Radio. Joining me shortly will be our co-host, Jay Huesman. And in fact, he's here right now, so we'll say hello to Jay. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sharon. Good to be here early on a Monday night than usual. Sal being on vacation and having a good time, so helping out and looking at some great racing action from Kansas this past weekend.
Yes, indeed. We hope Sal's having a good time on his vacation, and I appreciate you taking time to come on early for our show tonight and co-host. In the first half hour here, we'll get into the short track news from the weekend. We'll also cover the ARCA Menards Series race at Kansas Speedway this weekend, and then we'll give some updates from the ARCA East and West, as well as the Xfinity Series. Those series did not race this weekend, so it's going to be a quick first half hour. At 9 o'clock, we have some post-race audio that we'll share with our listeners from Zane Smith after winning the Truck Series race at Kansas Speedway this past weekend. Then we'll get into the Truck Series review at Kansas. And at 9:30, we have post-race audio from Kurt Busch, the winner of the Cup Series race at Kansas Speedway this past weekend. Then, of course, we'll do our Cup Series review at Kansas. And at 10 o'clock, it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fan for Racing crew. And we have a couple of people joining us. Our regulars are not available tonight, so I invited Chris Crichton to be on the show tonight, along with Tommy, one of our Fan for Racing crew members. So it should be an interesting Hot Topic discussion tonight.
I noticed you hadn't put the name up there, just that one of the spots had been filled, and I was wondering if it was Chris or not. So that's good good to hear and get to talk with him. I saw him a couple weeks ago down there at Why Not.
Okay, so, yeah, Chris comes on occasionally to our Hot Topic Sound Off segment, and looking forward to catching up with him during that 10 o'clock time frame. All right, let's go ahead and get into our short track racing review because there's a lot going on in the short track racing. Doug Colby filled in for Jimmy Blewett and won one for Kayla at Riverhead Speedway. That was in the NASCAR Whelen Modified Tour, the Miller Lite 200 at Riverhead Raceway. Nothing beats being able to fill in for somebody and then go on and win that race.
Yeah, several things that I like from this story. These drivers that can do that have the talent to jump into different vehicles, and it especially being, like you said, it's not even their own, a fill-in, not a ride they had slotted for themselves necessarily, and go out there, run well, pick up the victory is huge. And just such a confidence booster for the team, for him as a driver. All good things come out of that, especially for the team that asked him to come in and fill in, obviously.
Exactly. Also, Trayton Lapcevich capitalized in NASCAR's 10th series race. It was a thriller at Sunset Speedway this weekend, 200 laps. So a great win for him as well.
Another series, if you don't get the opportunity to watch where you can find it, I believe that one was on Racing America, was it not?
I'm actually reading it off of Flow Racing right now.
Okay. That was one that was on Flow Racing. Okay. Again, the opportunity to watch that series. It's different and it's unique. That's what I like. You know, it might not be one I watch regularly, but when I can catch one to watch a different series like that, I find interesting as a pure race fan of stock car racing. I'll say that.
Now, On Thursday, we also talked about the Illinois Speed Weeks, the first annual Illinois Speed Weeks at four different tracks, Fairbury Speedway, Farmer City Raceway, Lincoln Speedway, and Spoon River Speedway. And there were a number of winners there, with Brandon Shepherd taking the win over Mike Marlar, Jay, in that Spoon River event on May 11th.
And if you've been watching lately, Marlar has been on a good roll. He had a rough Bristol when he was there, ran the truck race and did okay. I think he had a top 20 finish. But returning back to dirt, yeah, the Winfield Warrior right now has been one of the best drivers out on the dirt tracks. Brandon Shepherd, always been one of the best. So he's hanging with some good company there.
He sure is. Okay, also at Lincoln Speedway, it was Dennis Erb Jr. over Brandon Shepherd who won the night before. So a different winner on the second night.
And there you have, if you're not familiar, Dennis Erb Jr. actually is the points leader, I believe, in the Lucas Oil late model series. He's one that I've actually gotten to interview down here at Jackson when he won the All-American 60 last year in November. So, and again, you heard B. Shep's name. I told you, he's consistently one of the top five. Brandon Shepherd coming out of Florida, another great dirt track driver. No matter where he shows up, you're going to see his name generally towards the top.
Well, it was Dirt Late Models who invaded Farmer City Raceway for the Farmer City 74 on the third race of Illinois Speed Weeks, and it was Tyler Erb who won that race over Ricky Thornton Jr.
And there's where I like to see you. You still get the mixture of names. We've talked about that in NASCAR, some parity. Tyler Erb Turbo, a good driver. Ricky Thornton's one that came out of Canada, I believe. He's from Canada, that has moved down into the U.S. and been running, I'd say, about 5-6 years and making a name for himself.
Okay, and Illinois Speed Week came to a close with the inaugural FALS Spring Shootout at Fairbury Speedway. And it was Bobby Pierce over Brandon Shepherd taking that event. All of these races, by the way, are available for replay at Flow Racing.
You know, Sharon, I should have asked you. I should have had my dad come on for this 5-10 minutes here. I'm sure he can fill you in on each and every one of those races, as I mentioned. Again, we heard Brandon Shepherd's name. Bobby Pierce, a second-generation driver, drives a number 32 back in his family-owned equipment. Good to see. He's had one that what's called a roller coaster with some other teams up and down, now back with a family-owned team, had some ups and downs. And that stretch, though, and I know there's a stretch, can't think of the name. I think it's the Hell Week Tour that goes through the Mid-East, Midwest, Mid-East there of Indiana, Ohio. Bobby Pierce always does good during that week. I believe that comes in either July or August. So not surprising to see him pick up a win there, especially at Falls, one of his regular tracks up in that area.
Yes, indeed. And I should mention here that this was an inaugural event here in Illinois. I would anticipate that this will be back for next season and hopefully for many years to come. So if you're looking for your schedule for the 2023 season, I would definitely mark this one on your calendar.
I didn't see any other responses. I know what I put up on mine. Ben Shelton was on Twitter and asked about that already of, you know, if this was going to happen again or should it happen again. I don't see how they not. I don't see how they don't book it for the next 5 years. It was a great little series there through Illinois, the inaugural event, like you said. I think they blew it out of the water. So, yeah, I don't see it not being back next year.
Yes, indeed. Okay, over at Racing America, there's a lot of news there as well. One bit of bad news. There was a race scheduled for May 28th. The Northwest SLM, that's a super late model Magic Valley event, has been canceled. So Actually, the next event for the Northwest Super Late Model Series is on May the 28th. So apparently they had to cancel the July 9th Super West Northwest Super Late Model Series event at the Magic Valley Speedway. It was forced to be canceled due to various factors. So they don't say what the factors were, but something to kind of keep in mind if you follow that series.
Yeah, that's a shame. And I want to encourage fans to be understanding. You know, there's a lot that goes into putting on events, especially ones that are on a schedule that are published. You know, track owners and sponsors, I mean, they do everything they can to meet that. When they have to cancel it, it's not pretty for anybody involved. So try to be understanding. You know, I've had ones, actually, we got rained out this weekend. Yeah, I was disappointed, but it happens. I mean, there's, you know, things that just you can't control and happen. Wait for the next one, you know, make the next show.
That's right. I should mention, we've run out of time for now, so we're going to get into the Arkham Menards series race to Kansas. But if you want to catch up on all the short track racing news, Racing America and Flow Racing are the two greatest spots to go for that information. But let's talk about Nick Sanchez and his win at Kansas Speedway this weekend. His last win at Kansas was last October for the season finale. So for him to come back to Kansas Speedway and win again is just fantastic. It's also his second win of the season and his third win of his career. So we had Nick Sanchez on the radio show after his first win. And I believe that was at Talladega Super Speedway. It was really great to hear his confidence about going back to Kansas Speedway this week.
You're right. We heard it already then coming into that following his Talladega win, having a great year here in the ARCA Menards Series, Rev Racing, been a top five. You mentioned it. He was a discussion, one of the top picks as far as race winners. As we get into the race, we'll talk about whether or not he had the best car. But that doesn't always matter as you had the top two contenders get in a battle. But being in that right position and capitalizing and being smart about it, which I think, and we saw, I believe he's up for one or more of the sweet moves of the race. I think he actually might have won.
Yes. Yes, he really did have a great race. He took care of his equipment. His main competition was his teammate, Raja Carruz, also from Rev Racing with Max Siegel. And the gap there was 0.775 of a second. Daniel Dyer's back. His suspension has been lifted. He finished in third place. Gus Dean finished fourth. And rounding out the top five are Connor Mosack. So in the number 23, Gus Dean was with Venturini Motorsports. Will Kimmel in the 69 finished in sixth place. It was Greg Van Alst finishing seventh. Ron Vandermeer Jr. finished eighth, and Amber Balcon finished ninth. Running out the top 10 was Tony Reidinger. Zachary Tinkle, by the way, had a good finish, finishing in 11th when you take all of the drivers involved there. One topic that I think we'll talk about on Hot Topics tonight, though, was an aggressive move by Drew Dollar, taking himself eventually, as well as Corey Heim, out of the race.
Well, and yeah, I know you had that listed on the Hot Topics, and I was sure it was going to be, especially considering a post-race interview by Mr. Billy Venturini. And if you don't know him, he says what's on his mind. I respect that. I don't know if I agree with all of his thoughts. And you just said an aggressive move. I don't know that it was an aggressive move. They were racing hard, and it looked like one of those of the arrow on the car. Yes, Drew Dollar lost his car, and, you know, he felt bad about it. The driver, Corey Heim, you know, it's a friend of his. He acknowledged, hey, that I'm not happy about that, but it happens. Billy Venturini, mm-hmm. maybe not so much as the owner.
Yeah, not so much. He took his car out of the race. So the owner's never happy about that when it happens. But Drew Dowdy used to drive with Billy Venturini. So I'm kind of surprised at some of his post-race comments about the Venturinis. So I thought that was a little disrespectful. So we'll talk about it during Hot Topics tonight. But two of the biggest names were taken out of the race. But I don't think that takes away from the Nick Sanchez victory or Raja Karuth. I do think that Nick Sanchez had the car to win, and those guys would have had to go through him if they wanted that win.
It would have been really interesting to see it. At the time when it happened, Corey Heim and Drew Dollar were your top two runners, were, if not the strongest car. But you mentioned it, Nick Sanchez and Raja Karuth, teammates, and that was one thing I wanted to address and talk about. I was kind of hoping that, I know you mentioned we've had Nick Sanchez on a couple of times, that we might have him on tonight. But they raced at that time was third and fourth, right behind those two battling for the lead, had a great race side by side as teammates, side by side. You know, lap traffic came into play. I know Raja Karuth was up for one of the Reese's sweep moves of the race as well, as they came up on a slow car to make the move, give up the spot at that time to Nick Sanchez. Sanchez had kind of gotten the advantage, but that opened the gap a little bit. Raja able to get a career-best second-place finish going down the top five. We saw Daniel Dye, you mentioned, the suspension lifted, had a rough day, and I couldn't even remember how far up he had come. I knew he had been back up towards the top five, but to come home with a third-place finish, we'll talk about where he is in points and how that settles out, was a huge, huge day for that team, GMS Racing. Because like I said, I don't remember how early they had damage and went a lap or two down and had to get it back.
Exactly. Let's go ahead and go to the ARCA Menards Series point standings after this race. If you want to cover that, there's a tie at the top.
All right. Yeah, and it is between those two teammates now. Nick Sanchez picking up his second victory of the year, as you mentioned. To go along with all three top tens out of the four races is at 155 points. Raja Karuth, second place finish, career best finish, two top fives and three top tens as well, sitting tied with him at 155 points. Karuth has the advantage of a 5.8 average finish, Nick Sanchez at 7.3. Then you get down to third place now, Daniel Dye slid back one position, but is only 3 points back at 152. And his average finish, a 6.3. Now, fourth in points is Corey Heim, we just mentioned. He had three races in, one win, two top fives, two top tens, this one being a bad finish there. He's still fourth in points with only three races at minus 33. Then Tony Breidinger at minus 37, tied there with Gus Dean. Gus Dean, another one, only three races, but they've all been top fives. So another one making the most out of the starts he gets, not running all the races. Amber Balkane slid up a spot or two, I believe, now into the seventh spot at minus 46. D.L. Wilson is in eighth, having made all four starts. Parker Chase slid back a little because he wasn't on the list this weekend, into ninth. So three starts, but one top five, two top tens, puts him at minus 54, tied with now Greg Van Alst. No, I'm sorry. D.L. Wilson and Parker Chase are tied eighth and ninth. Moving into the 10th spot, you heard his name there in the rundown, 10th points now for four races, is Greg Van Alst at minus 55. And he is also in a tie with Ryan Huff, who did not make the race this weekend. So slid back a little bit. And we know that we talked about that last Thursday, the entry list, that we were going to see some point shuffling if some of these drivers weren't on this weekend's entry list.
Exactly. So it is going to be interesting. Their next race, by the way, is coming up The Arkham Menards series returns to action in 2 weeks at Charlotte Motor Speedway in Concord, North Carolina. That race will be broadcast live on Fox Sports 1. So fans will need to stay tuned for that race as the Arkham Menards series continues their battle with the tie at the top. So I think it's a do-not-miss event. Rev Racing is having a banner year this season with Roger Caruth and Nick Sanchez.
They certainly are. You got to give them a big shout-out with that. We see it's a three-car battle right now with Nick Sanchez, Roger Caruth, and then Daniel Dye, and I think that's going to continue. What will be interesting is you mentioned that race at Charlotte. That's where we see maybe some other drivers, such as, I don't know again if what Corey Heim's schedule is, but being in the Charlotte area, and we may see a variety of different drivers make a rare ARCA start or one of their regular starts if they got a limited schedule. So again, I can't wait. We got to wait 2 weeks here for the Thursday preview show to see what the entry list looks like of who those three are going to have to battle with, because we know they're going to be in the battle.
That's true. That General Tire 150 will take place on May 27th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time there at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Now, also, the next race for the Arkham Menards Series West, the Portland 100, is on June 4th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time. That's 7:30 Eastern at Portland International Raceway. That race will be a live stream event on Flow Racing, if you want to mark your calendar for that event, because they are really close on the points there. And I think all of the top 10 have raced every event so far. And then for the ARCA East will be racing with the ARCA Menards Series and the Sioux Chief Showdown, three points-paying events in one race on June the 11th. At 8 p.m. Central Time, that's 9 p.m. Eastern, out at Iowa Speedway, and this one will be televised on MAV TV. So a big race there at Iowa Speedway for the Calypso Lemonade 150 with 3 points paying series in one race.
That's going to be my computer locked up. I was trying to pull up the West Series points as we were talking about that. But you mentioned the East Series. We'll get back to them in a minute. The E-Series challenge, the Sioux Chief Showdown, you mentioned, and E-Series, as well as the ARCA Menards Series, all in one, especially at Iowa Speedway. That's the one I've had a pleasure to do there with you, Sharon. Going to be, you're right, a huge event with a lot of impact on the three different point standings. And now I got the West Series points pulled up. You mentioned the tight points battle there as well. Jake Drew, your leader, three top fives. In the three races, is your points leader by 5 points over Tanner Reif, Cole Moore, Paul Pedernicilli, Austin Herzog, Todd Souza, Takuma Koga, Joey East, Sebastian Aries, and Bridget Burgess. And those are your top 10, and all three of them have, or all 10 of those have made all three starts. So your points range, Tanner Reif back 5, Cole Moore is minus 6, Paul Pedernicilli Jr., minus 14. Austin Herzog, minus 15. Todd Souza, minus 17. And then it ranges from minus 24 to minus 37 from 7th through 10th. So that one really is a super tight points battle when you think about it. And we've seen that in the past with this West Series.
Yeah, Tanner told us his name is pronounced Rife when he was on the show with us. So just an FYI there. I do think that this is going to be a fun one to watch as these guys continue to battle for that championship trophy at the end of the season.
Yeah, and Jake Drew is one of those we haven't seen. Again, three top fives. That victory is coming, and it couldn't come at a better time as he's had that competition closing in on him. Cole Moore, another one, just waiting to see him get that victory. The other two victories went to Taylor Gray and Landon Lewis, who have made one start each. So that's where you know, I say smart racing, especially when you're looking at the championship, when these drivers get Corey Heim, other drivers that come and make single starts, is being the best of the regulars and then getting a victory either over them or at another race where maybe they're not in it. But to be championship racing, getting those top fives every week, that'll put you in position. Jake Drew's average finish at 3.7. So, again, that's why he's at the top of the board.
Exactly. And in the Arkham and Arch Series East, it's all Sammy Smith winning three or four races there.
Yeah, that one a little bit different story. We saw a little bit of a gap. I know we mentioned it. Maybe we were going to see that tighten up. But Sammy come right back with another victory for his third out of the year. Again, four top fives in four races. Average finish of 2.0. That's tough to compete with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Taylor Gray, the other one to get that fourth victory out of the four, mentioned that, going to try and work his way in, is 9 points back, and his average is 2.3. So that really puts a strain on third. Leland Honeymoon is 25 points back. His average finish is 4.8. Four top tens, three of them being top fives. Great year, but we've seen this in the past. You got a couple drivers that are having excellent years, so it's really tough. When your average is 4.8 and your third in points 25 back, you know you got some tough competition.
Exactly right.
Fourth place, guest we've had here a couple of times, Christian Rose, two top tens at minus 51. Stephanie Moyer with one top 10 at minus 52. And Brad Smith in sixth place. I believe those six drivers there have made all four starts at minus 61. But you also got Jake Finch, Donald Feig, Daniel Escato, and Willie Mullins rounding out the top 10. Finch, Feig have both made three starts. Daniel Escato, the Mexican driver, has had two starts, as well as Willie Mullins.
Okay. Also not racing this past weekend, they were on a break, is the Xfinity Series. And their next race is actually going to be this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway, the SRS Distribution 250, at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, May the 21st. They will have qualifying Friday, May 6th, 5:30 to 6:30. It will be single vehicle, one-lap all entries. And practice will be on Friday from 5 until 5:30 p.m., and that will be covered on MRN and Sirius XM Alaska Radio, as well as Fox Sports One. So definitely check that out this weekend coming up as well, because these guys have some some things going on with their driver points as well.
Well, and here the points right now, I don't want to say don't matter, but the NASCAR top three touring series have the playoffs where they reset. So there's some other things that come into play. AJ Allmendinger is currently your points leader with one race win and seven playoff points. But Noah Gregson, second, although he's 25 back, has two race wins, 15 playoff points. Ty Gibbs, third in points, 41 back, but he's got three wins and 17 playoff points. So would actually reset as your points leader when they do it as they are right now. Then you got Justin Allgaier, one win, seven playoff points. Josh Berry, same thing. Then Brandon Jones, six, has a victory and six playoff points. Sam Mayer doesn't have the victory yet, but two playoff points built up. Riley Herbst, Ryan Sieg, Austin Hill, your top 10. The other two you got to look at, Landon Castle and Daniel Hemric. Now, Austin Hill has a victory, five playoff points, should be locked in with that victory. But Daniel Hemric at minus 178, his competition is also behind him. Anthony Alfredo is 22 points behind him, and then another 40 points behind him, Jeb Burton, Sheldon Creed, another six back, because that's where that playoff cut line is just to get into the playoffs when they reset.
Exactly. Now, it is top of the hour. We're going to go ahead and move on to the truck series because the last race was here at Kansas, the Heart of America 200. And There was a lot going on in this race. It was exciting to watch. He pretty much dominated and won the Heart of America 200 on Saturday night for his third victory of the season. I do have some post-race audio, and we can listen to this in its entirety. It's about 7.5 minutes. So we're going to listen to Zane Smith, driver of the number 38 Front Row Motorsports Chevrolet, after winning at Kansas Speedway this past weekend. So we will be able to listen to the entirety of this interview. Let's see if I can get to it.
Congratulations, Zane.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and start our media availabilities. We're now joined by Zane Smith, driver of the number 38 Speedco Ford for Front Row Motorsports. Zane, can you talk us through the race? You were pretty dominant throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I was a little worried in the first stage just how much I feel like we fell off. The really weird in-between racetrack at that time with the sun going down, but the track didn't fill up. So, we fired off really good, honestly probably too good, and then, I don't know, lap 20 would come around and we just get really, really tight. And just, I don't know, really, trucks in general, it's just so hard to manage a tight truck. I'd way rather manage a loose truck, and took a pretty decent swing at it in the second stage. And, it was definitely enough, and then I knew I wanted more there than. There on, it was just kind of managing my tires and searching for grip. And at that time, it was really just fine to lose. And those are, they look fun, but they really aren't mental-wise. And so just a really good truck. This was our Vegas truck. And I feel like this is kind of what we would have seen at Vegas if I didn't get caught up in that incident. We still almost night with the right front torn off the thing, and so I don't know. I really enjoy coming to this place. I've been searching for a mile and a half win for a while now, it feels like, and I had a lot of them taken from me. And I thought that late race restart was possibly going to be another one, and luckily just timed that right in the box, right with the 66 that got in my bumper, kind of shot me out there. At that time, it's just managing runs and trying to be as big of a wake as possible, and fortunately, that's what we did.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and open it up for questions. If you have one, please raise your hand. We'll start with Randy.
I'm Randy Cooper, Kansas City Star. A couple years ago, we go back to you led 50 laps here a couple years ago, and then you came back and you led 37 laps. So how satisfying is this after really, really coming close last 3 times you've been here,
you've been
in the league. What does it mean to finally do it here after all that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like I should have a couple of these since I've been here. These are, I mean, all anything NASCAR is just hard to close out. Truck races are crazy. I've been on both sides of it, so they're just never over until it's over. And even coming two to go, I'm like, there's going to be a caution. So at that time I was just preparing mentally what I should do in that situation, and fortunately I didn't, but I feel like that's kind of how you go about it, the worst case scenario, and I guess hope for the best of times.
What is Daniel?
Dylan Benz, Speed Sports. I mean, this is your most dominating performance.
Yeah,
108 last night. Would you have expected that to come here, and how does that feel?
Yeah, so this is pretty funny. I think back of it. I told Chris after walking back to the garage after Vegas, kind of dejected that I had gotten ganged up on KTM trucks and then lost that one. And it was just such a good truck since we unloaded it. There was a lot of similarities there today. I told him in Vegas, we bring what we had here tonight. There should be no reason I don't win Kansas just because rubber gets laid down more and you move around a lot more. And you have the opportunity to kind of pull away, and that was kind of the case. And so super excited we come here again in the playoffs, and that would be more important to win.
Thank you.
Harry Loomis Griffin Media. Zane, last year you won just one time. This year, first year front row, you got three wins on three completely different tracks before anybody else has even gotten to. What's it been with you in this front row mirrors that's been so successful right out of the gate?
Yeah, I definitely took a lot of criticism last year, which is a given, but a lot of people don't like to really look at facts and kind of see what how we ran throughout the race, so where we'd be leading, and then come down pit road and something would happen. And these races aren't that long to rebound from that. So just the biggest difference is I feel like in racing that I haven't really had yet is off-track interaction. And I never realized how valuable that really is. And I feel like myself and my team are, whether or not they're my team or not, I would still like to hang out with them off the racetrack. And I feel like communication and everything just a whole lot better in that case.
Any further questions? Back to Luis.
And you had a 4-second lead over John Hunter before he spun. I mean, were you aware how dominant your truck was? I mean, you talked about you were concerned about potential cautions, but having that kind of speed, it almost seemed inevitable if you don't screw it up.
Yeah, for sure. Something that made me feel a lot better was the driver intro. John Hunter and I were talking. People were asking him how his stuff was. People were asking me. John Hunter instead of me, only worried about me. And so I can say the same thing about him. So that was good to hear that, because you don't know in our, it feels like 10 minutes of practice how we are. And I felt good at practice and everything seemed good, but you really don't know, especially practicing in the heat of the day and racing at night. And so I think this is just a start, really. I feel like our mile and a half stuff is really good, and I feel like I've gotten way, way better on mile and a half over the past couple of years, and I really just enjoy going to them, and really love coming to Kansas in general, and especially next year coming up.
Where do you see yourself next year? Do you want to continue to build this program? I mean, I know you had a cup offer last year that, you know, kind of fell to pieces, but where do you see yourself a year from now?
I don't know. I mean, I've gotten that question a lot this year. I just want to win races. That's all I really care about. I feel like, obviously, yeah, all of us want to go race on Sunday, but I'm about to be 23 years old. Like, I have time to get there, and I just want it to be the right opportunity when I get there. In the meantime, build my resume and hopefully keep collecting these and build the trophy case.
Thank you.
Any last questions?
Okay, that's it for the interview with Zane Smith. Your thoughts about that interview, Jay?
If you get back off mute here, there were several interesting things there. First off, confidence he has in that team, and that team, the way it is running right now. I know he mentioned some rough weeks, and we'll talk about that when we look at the point standings. But right now, in that race in particular, very dominant win. Like you said, it feels like he should have had Vegas with a truck similar to that, the same setup. To know where he's at with that team and have that kind of confidence and back it up on the track. And he hit on something, we talk about week in and week out, just in the Arca Menards race, Corey Heim and Drew Dollar, down at the bottom of the list when it comes to the results. That is not indicative of how they ran or where they were at in that race. And he mentioned that. So I thought that was good. Good kid. And I got a smart head on his shoulders. I don't know who the reporter was there. I know you had said we were trying to get him on the show of how to word that question of having a cup opportunity not come to fruition. I don't remember how she phrased it, but yeah.
That was Lee Spencer.
Fell apart, I think is how she said it. You know, I know that's got to be tough. He had come off another second place finish in the championship that, and not having that ride because that was the Cup deal had come apart and not come to fruition with the sale of Chip Ganassi. So to come back and get this opportunity and make the best of it, and, you know, when asked about his future, like he said, he wants to make sure it's the right opportunity, not rush forward just because it's a ride or that chance to move up, the right opportunity, because that makes all the world a difference.
It certainly does. We've seen it happen when drivers move up too quickly. It's a big, big adjustment when you're moving into the Cup Series. So I think taking his time and looking for that right opportunity, and like he said, developing his resume along the way, I think that's a smart thing to do for Zane Smith. And yeah, there was so much in that interview. The fact, like you said, the confidence he knew after Las Vegas that he had a car that could win at Kansas Speedway. And obviously his team believed that as well because they gave him the car to make that happen. And you're right, Zane Smith is a smart driver, and he took care of his equipment, and he was there at the end. But he pretty much dominated for the entire evening. So I'm really happy to see Zane Smith having the kind of season that he's having. This is his third victory, and I don't think anybody else in the Truck Series has that right now. So that puts him at the top of the list when the playoffs begin in September. So definitely looking forward to seeing what Zane Smith does in follow-up to his runner-up finish last season. He's certainly on track for a championship this season.
And I look at the team as well, of Front Row Motorsports. We saw Todd Gilliland finish out strong there before moving to the Cup Series, what they're building, especially in the Truck Series. And then I think, just as we've seen with Colic Racing, GMS, transferring that over to another series such as the Xfinity or the Cup Series. I don't know that we've fully seen it yet at the Cup level, but to see that, and maybe that is, he has that opportunity. I know they're partnered with, I believe, DGR, David Gillen Racing, here with this number 38. But to see maybe them build a driver like that and bring him into Front Row Motorsports and really take their Cup program to the next level. I don't know if that, you know, that's something he's looking at, one of those spots he wants to go. But I certainly see that as a possibility, as that team, especially like I mentioned here in the Truck Series over the past two seasons, has really become one of the top contending truck teams. So it'd be good to see if he could continue that with that same organization, because then you're not changing teams, just moving to the Cup level.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looks good for Front Row Motorsports to bring drivers like Todd Gilliland and Zane Smith into their stable. And I do think it's certainly a possibility, and I think we may see more from Front Row Motorsports in the future if that is the trend that they are on. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to our race review now of that race. As I mentioned, Zane Smith won that race. He's 22 years of age. He drives the number 38 Speedco Ford for owner Bob Jenkins at Front Row Motorsports, and his crew chief this weekend was Chris Lawson. It was his sixth victory in 54 Camping World Truck Series races, and his third victory this season, along with seven top 10 finishes. It was his first victory and fourth top 10 finish in five races at Kansas Speedway. Ty Majeski finished second. He posted his first top 10 finish in three races at Kansas and his fifth top 10 finish this year. Grant Infinger finished third, posting his sixth top 10 finish in eight races at Kansas. Wallace Allen, 19th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Smith did lead a race high 108 of the 134 laps of the race. Ty Majeski's second-place finish was his career-best finish. Grant Infinger in third, Chandler Smith and Christian Eckes rounding out the top five. Then it was the pole sitter, John Hunter Nemechek, finishing sixth, followed by Matt DiBenedetto, Derek Kraus, Matt Crafton, Ben Rhodes, rounding out the top 10. Corey Hyman, the number 51 for KBM, finished stage one. It was Zane Smith winning stage two as well as stage three. There were 9 lead changes among 5 drivers and 4 cautions for 19 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 127.709 miles per hour. One of the things that I took away from his Zane's interview as well, Jay, is that he was talking about how hard it is to win in the truck series. These are really tough races to win. It was on his mind on that final restart whether or not he was going to be able to pull it off. So he did a great job.
Yeah, you're right. He did talk about that. That was the other thing I was just going to mention. Statistically, you look at it on a paper, yeah, he dominated, led 108 laps over 4 different periods, and I think the next highest laps led was 4. No, I take that back. Corey Heim ended up out, led 3 times for 18 laps. But that doesn't mean it was easy, and he said, you know, he was concerned about his own truck there for a period. And then the closing laps, you just know it's going to get wild and exciting. He's waiting for that caution for the final restart. And there was a lot of shuffling behind him and some different strategies going on. So you're right, and he acknowledged it. He said, hey, yeah, it may look like I dominated this, but it's not easy. And he's saying that even with knowing how good his truck was, like he said, what he wanted from Vegas there, to realize that. And you're right. You look behind him, Ty Majeski, Grant Infinger, Chandler Smith, Christian Eckes. Those 4 were having a heck of a battle. You didn't know how the top 5 were going to come out. I think John Hunter Nemechek there at the end slid back a little. 7th place, Matt DiBenedetto made a pit stop there at the end, come from 14th, 15th, somewhere in that range, to get back up into the 7th position. And because they weren't sticker tires, they had one run on them. They were scuff tires. So they didn't know how that was going to work, but played out real good for them. Derek Kraus, another one. He bounced around throughout the day. I really thought he was going to be in contention for a top 5 finish and possibly a victory. I say possibly because Zane Smith definitely had a strong truck, but good run for Derek Kraus. And then you had some regulars, Matt Crafton and Ben Rhodes, rounding out the top 10. Like I said, that's one of those, especially over the radio or looking at the scoring rundown, you can't describe the action that was happening throughout the entire field, especially in those closing laps.
Yes, indeed. Some other mentions here. Kobe Howard with an 11th place finish. Chase Purdy finishing in 13th. You had Haley Deegan with a 17th place finish. And we mentioned earlier Wallace Allen, the highest finishing rookie of the race. A couple of drivers had some issues. Matt Mills had an axle issue, so that took him out of the race. And then all at 91 laps. And then Jesse Wuji was just too slow. He was out of the race after 24 laps. So not the finishes they were looking for. The margin of victory, again, was 1.653 seconds. And the race took 1 hour, 34 minutes, and 26 seconds to finish that race. But it was an action-packed time frame, that's for sure.
And right now, aside from Zane Smith picking up his 3rd victory of the year, right now I think you got to look at Ty Majeski as maybe one of the hottest drivers on the circuit for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. So keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I was really kind of surprised because Ty Majeski, what team does he drive for again? It's escaping me right
now.
No,
not Nice Motorsports. I'm drawing a blank.
Maybe it is Nice.
See if I can pull it. Let's see here.
He, one thing I learned about Ty Majeski today is that in addition to being a driver, he's also an engineer at the team that he works for or that he drives for. So doing a little bit of double duty there, I think is really helping him become a better driver as well.
Well, and the reason I say I don't think it's Nice Motorsports is I think that's who let him go a few years ago. He returned back to the short track racing, trying to pull up number 66 Toyota because he's teammate. Give me a second on that. But, thank you. I knew it was one of the bigger powerhouse teams. And returning and getting that opportunity after having gone away, I want to say it was about 2 years. And we thought that maybe Nice Motorsports pulled the plug on him a little bit early, and maybe he needed that. There's sometimes where things just don't work out. But to go back to the short track roots, continue doing what he's doing, he picked up, I believe it was his fourth Rattler victory, and have this opportunity again now with Thor Sports Racing and making the most of it and really finding his groove. Like I said, over the past four races, I'd have to say he may be one of the best out there on the track right now. And then you got Grant Enfinger, another one. We saw what he did last year in all but one race and not eligible for the playoffs between two teams, not going to coming back to GMS as a full-time, that we would see him a little bit slow start, but I think we're seeing him start to fit into that team and they get their rhythm. Another one, right now he's on the playoff bubble we'll look at here in a minute. But I think by the end of the season, going to be back in that conversation of championship contender.
Yes, indeed. And there's so much that can still happen. They only have 8 races in. I believe that's half of their season. So these next 8 races are going to be big events because those drivers that don't have a win yet are still looking for that first win to seal the deal for being in the playoffs this year. So there might be a few of these drivers that make it in on points, but not very many. I think we're still going to see some winners, some different winners before the season is over.
Most certainly, I think that's very possible. So it'll be interesting. You mentioned, I believe you're right, that they are exactly halfway through their regular season. And as we look at the points, we'll talk about that playoff bubble, as I mentioned, with Grant Enfinger. And he is now
go
a little
ahead and
bit
cover
on the better.
Now.
Okay. You hit on one thing already. Right now, Ben Rhodes is your points leader, got a victory already and 5 stage wins for 10 playoff points. John Hunter Nemechek, another one, a little bit of a slow start, especially when you kind of compare to last year, but has 1 win, 3 stage point or 3 stage wins for a total of 8 playoff points. Zane Smith, right now 21 points back overall, 3 wins and 4 stage wins, though 19 playoff points, is your current playoff points leader with those 19. Chandler Smith in 4th, 1 win for the 5 playoff points. Then you got Ty Majeski, no wins, no stages, but it is 5th in points. Stuart Friesen is currently minus 55. 1 stage win for a playoff point, as well as Carson Hocevar. He had a rough race. He was another one, been running really good.
Yes.
Back-to-back 2nd place finishes, but had a rough week. I think he came back to finish 15th this past weekend. So 68 points back. He does have a stage win for a playoff point. 8th, 9th, and 10th. Here's where it's tight. Christian Eckes in the A spot, Grant Enfinger in the 9th, and Matt Crafton in the 10th spot. No playoff points built up for him. And that cut line now, as I mentioned, Grant worked his way to the good side of it. He's at minus 83, Crafton at minus 87. So they're 4 points apart. They do now have a 20-point gap, though, over Tanner Gray at minus 107. And then another 17 points back to Derek Krause. And Derek Krause, another one, as he's getting his a solid footing under him, going to start being up there in contention. But you got some tough guys you're going to have to jump over there. Tyler Ankrum, another one we've seen a playoff contender, falling back to 13th, and Matt DiBenedetto in 15th. You can't count them out yet.
You really can't. Now, one thing that I want to mention about Derek Krause is that he has come into the Truck Series with a brand new race team with Bill McAnally and Hildeman. So it's taken time not only for Derek's learning curve, but for the team's learning curve as a new race team in this series. So for him, after 3 years, to be in that 12th spot, I think says a lot for their progress together coming into this Truck Series.
It is. I understand that, and we've seen the improvement. I'm sure it's not as fast maybe as they'd like to see, but especially here you mentioned second half of the season is where we're really going to see it come through, and it definitely seems to be trending in a good upward direction.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Anything else that we want to mention here in the Truck Series?
Keep an eye on that playoff bubble. We've seen some drivers. I mentioned Tyler Ankrum, Matt DiBenedetto, and then right at the cut line, Tanner Gray and Derek Krause, just waiting for them to have that breakout race leading into a breakout year to contend with these veterans, Matt Kraft and Grant Enfinger, and then Christian Eckes. And that's how tough and tight this Truck Series is, as Zane Smith mentioned in his interview. There's a reason he's piling up those playoff points, because he knows he may need them, because the competition is that stiff and tough going into these playoffs.
Exactly right. We mentioned Ty Majeski, too, and that he's racing with ThorSport Racing while also being an engineer. So I didn't see in the points. I think he's raced every race so far, so they are working as they go to secure sponsorship for Ty Majeski. Road Ranger joins them for 5 Truck Series races in that number 66 Toyota Tundra. Their stint will start at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. So it's been a little bit of a nip and tuck here for Ty Majeski, but really good to hear that he is going to have this sponsorship with Road Ranger for these 5 Truck Series races to keep him on the track and contending toward the playoff campaign.
Well, and runs like this, that's what brings that sponsorship money in, is seeing runs like this, even on a limited budget, so they know they're investing in something that's already on the way up. You know, that stock is rising, if you will. So I think that's what you're seeing, is that the sponsors are aware of that and see that, and it's being returned in investment.
Exactly right. Another thing that happened this weekend, Stuart Friesen had some flight delays, and so he missed practice, and subbing for him was Bubba Wallace behind the wheel of Stuart Friesen's number 52 truck.
And we talked about this with even drivers going to other series, jumping in another one. I think they said when Bubba Wallace landed, Tripp Bruce called, and I mean, immediately had a message from him and said, hey, can you come over and do this? It was a Toyota swap deal. So, yeah, able to work that out. He did. I think Bubba Wallace did a great job with that. Knowing what Stuart Friesen actually liked, because I know during practice, Bubba Wallace talked about how the truck was, and he didn't think it was right for him. But Stuart Friesen apparently liked it and appreciated it the way it was, as he had a good run, had to come from the back. Like I said, you got to watch these races, because Stuart Friesen did have to start from the back, being that he didn't qualify the truck. And I know we see that happen. I mean, that's one of the drawbacks. We talk about drivers running other races. I don't remember where Stuart Friesen was running, but yeah, was flying in, catching a changeover there in Chicago, and had a flight delay, and that's what where the issue came in. So yeah, that is one of the drawbacks of having a driver out running around other races, but they managed to work it out, and Stuart Friesen, if you will, brought it home. Let's see, where did he get up to? 14th place finish. Again, not indicative of actually where he ran, and it shows he was credited with a 5th place start, but technically he did start from the back, as he did have to get in that truck after Bubba Wallace qualified it.
That's right. Okay, we are now at the 9:30 time frame, which means it's time for us to get to the review of our Cup Series at Kansas. But we're going to start with the post-race interview from Kurt Busch. How exciting was that to see him win in that number 45 car for 23-11 racing in his Toyota? Really exciting from a couple of different fronts. So we're going to listen to his interview. We won't be able to listen to the entire interview because it's 18 and a half minutes, but we will listen to about 7.5 minutes of it, and then Jay and I will talk on the other side of it. But let's go ahead and listen now.
Sharon, before you start that, I don't know if it's something you can work on or fix while this audio is playing. I got a listener saying the audio on the Fan for Racing, the audio isn't working off the player there.
Oh, okay. I'll take a look at that while we listen to Kurt Busch. And thank
cool.
you so much for letting us know.
I will pass that along.
Okay. And here we go with Kurt Busch, the winner.
Our media availability here with our winning driver, Kurt Busch. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Pretty exciting. Can you talk to us about the race after the day? What's going on?
This journey at Kansas Speedway. Pat Warren's a really good friend of mine, and he texted me, sorry I didn't see after the race. So I'll get there one day. And to win at a mile and a half, to beat Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, be in position for the win. I knew it was there. I had to dig deep and had to find something. Just find something that would be a little bit above Larson. A little bit of a trickery move on Larson. And so I just have to stay close. I got to stay close. After we got beat off pit road and we were restarting third, just got to stay close. Last year in the fall race, I finished fourth here and burned up my front tires on that last run. And I was going to stay close. I can make my little Kyle. If he can't get the lead to 18, he'll let me slide through. And there was definitely a connection of the JGR car helping the 2311 car. But it's deeper than that, the family. And Kyle Busch helped me as far as pass to not break my momentum. And we saw that happen with Larson when I was racing him before that. Turn two was his weak spot, and that's where I knew I needed to make the final move. And it all unfolded perfectly where I was able to make the move and not lose momentum and break the draft and break on our Toyota home of victory lane with Jordan Brand, Monster Energy, Toyota, everybody that's part of this. It was that moment where I could not let the team down, and I didn't want to have to make a phone call to MJ afterwards on why we did not. So I can
definitely
feel the connection. I'm proud that we won. Congratulations. Go ahead and open it up for questions. If you have one, please raise your hand. We'll get a mic over to you. One here. Go to Bob. Just want to back to Jim. Bob Pocker, Fox Sports. What do you think this win says about your career and the win with another organization, driving the scheme of everybody looking at in a season where up until today, you've been led 9 laps.
It's a process. You have to start from the ground up when you're building a brand new car. Whether it's the next gen or the number 45 at 2311, you know, the Toyota family brought me in. Monster Energy said, let's go do this. And you have steps that you have to take. And when I switched from Roush to Penske, we won in our sixth race together. When I switched over to SHR, I think it was again like our sixth race, won at Martinsville. This one took, you know, a little bit, but here we are, we're winners. It's a process. And the Ganassi car, we won midsummer. When I switched to them, and each place, each sequence, I'm just happy to have a ride and happy to give my best. Early in my career, it was all about me, me, me. And now I've understood this is a team and every element is super important. So I was able to do my job today. My team put me out there in position, and I wasn't going to let anybody named Kyle beat me today.
We'll go to Jennifer in the back, and then we'll come to Daniel. Jen Fisher with NASCARSocialist.com. So Kurt Strike, the number 45, and the Petty family gave their blessing 42311 to use that number. Given that history, with this marking of 22-year anniversary out of Petty's passing, how does that all make this win all the more meaningful?
Yeah, I've talked with Kyle Petty a couple times, and I'm sure I'll get a text even from Richard that, yes, they were registering the number 45 for years, and MJ wanted this number on the second card, and we asked the Petty family for their blessing. Kyle Petty said, yep, if it's you, Kurt, I'll let it ride. And, yes, I could feel things early on with Kyle and the way that he wanted this 45 card to have success. And it's a small spiritual connection, and that's, again, I'm happy that we've won, and also it's a representation of a brand. And it's a 45. With us winning, we're even just continuing to build and build and build. We want the 45 to be successful, and I'll be able to call Kyle, and I'll find him in Level Cross, and we'll go get a drink together and say thanks.
We'll go to Daniel, Caleb, and then we'll go back again.
Daniel, friends, respect, Kyle. First off, who are you flying back home with?
Kyle seemed to be in a rush, and then he said he'd stay.
Yes,
I flew out with Kyle, and he'd wait. Yes, flying home with Denny, and we're going to get ice cream with his daughters tomorrow after game.
Denny, as you mentioned earlier, he said that the emotion of this win for him makes you stronger than any of his own personal wins. What does that mean to you that this is so important to him on that scale?
There's things that an owner has to go through that are really heavy, and Denny has chosen this ownership role, and he's done it with integrity and class and ambition and motivation, and things I would never want to put myself in a position for. He called me a year and a half ago, 2 years, and said, hey, I got a plan, and like, if it all works out, I'll be part of it. Wow, just learning some of the things, being close to him as a friend, but also as a racer, and now he's my boss. Wow, there's a lot that goes into the ownership side, and that's why he is overwhelmed with emotions right now, because of how much responsibility it all is, and how much teamwork it takes. Thanks to the manufacturer, the sponsor, the amount of people, I hope that this helps everything as far as the foundation that we've laid. You know, with Bubba's win last year, that was a huge foundation. I would say that this is like building the first floor, building the second floor, and the sky's the limit. So this means a lot to me as well, because we started this 45 car from scratch, and a lot of guys, girls, people came from other teams. And the spirit was, we're a bunch of rebels. Let's go do this.
Okay, that's the interview with Kurt Busch after winning the AdventHealth 400 at Kansas Speedway this past weekend. I'm going to do a quick test here at FanForRacing.com to see if I can get this to play.
Okay.
And I'm not hearing it myself. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and I've got the volume all the way up. So what I'm going to suggest people do, if you're having trouble hearing at FanForRacing.com, is go to your browser and put in blogtalkradio.com. That's all one word, blogtalkradio.com/FanForRacing_radio, At the top of the list there is the Kansas NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topics Sound Off. Click on that link or click play button, and you should be able to hear the radio show from there. So that's an alternative for those people that are having trouble hearing at FantaRacing.com. Okay, now then, let's to hear your comments about the interview there with Kurt Busch, Jay.
Well, the one thing, as I listened to that and to having watched the race, but then to hear the driver talk about it, Kurt Busch being calculated and aware of, he said he knew where Kyle Larson's weak point was. They were great mm-hmm. racing, and I'll talk about that a little bit more here in a little bit. But to pinpoint, okay, this is where I'm making up that ground. And I know spotters play a role in that and say, hey, you gain on him here running this line, helping the drivers pick that spot. But to hear Kurt be aware of that and say, this is where I'm going to capitalize through the other corner, if I can maintain and not give it back, you know, this is where I'm going to get him, set him up. It took several laps. And we saw some great side-by-side racing. I know they interviewed Kyle Larson. We saw a little bit of side-by-side, and Kurt didn't pinch him into the wall, but didn't give him but a car width. Kyle tried to take it and rubbed the wall a little bit. But, I mean, that's how hard and intense it was. And they both, I mean, were smiling and happy about it. And we saw this. I go back to Chicagoland, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch. You know, we were waiting to see if there was going to be a fight in the garage. They were hugging because that was some great side-by-side racing action. You know, like I said, I mean, Kurt didn't give him any extra room, but he didn't cut him off or pinch him into the wall. Kyle's like, there's a little hole there. I'm going to try it. It didn't work.
That's true. One of the things that I loved about this interview, too, is, and we all know this, we remember the Kyle Busch of yesteryear, if you will, during his younger days. And he mentions it here. He's learned from where he was when he first came into the sport, the me attitude versus the team attitude, and how that has changed his whole perspective. Of going to all these different race teams and eventually winning. I think I read earlier he's won not only with several different race teams, but with all the different manufacturers, including Dodge, Ford, Chevy, and Toyota. And I don't think there's many drivers that have done what Kurt Busch has done. You know, this is the kind of racing that we want to see, where somebody is studying and looking at where the weak spots are and then taking advantage of that weak spot to showcase his own talent as a race car driver. And I loved it. I haven't always been a fan of Kurt Busch, but I'll tell you what, I really like the evolution that we've seen of Kurt Busch over the years and the success that he has had with all these different race teams and all these different manufacturers. He's got it down to a system and a process that he says when you come into a new organization. It is a process. It's not something that happens overnight. I love that interview.
You're right, and I know he talked about it in his post-race interview right on the track when he got out of the car, too, about the team and just the role he plays in it. You mentioned, I'm trying to think of the list I saw. I know what you're talking about. Even Dave Moody said it. When you look at the team he's gone to, he has elevated. Jack Roush Racing, where he started, Team Penske, Stuart Haas Racing, Furniture Row. Again, he was, believe it or not, he was part of that building, Regan Smith and Kurt Busch, part of that building to what led to Martin Truex coming in and the championship they had. Kurt was a stepping stone in that, and I think that's a huge part. And then Chip Ganassi Racing, again, was on a climb here in their last 2 years with Kurt Busch there, and coming in already to 23-11, we've seen that. And you're right, he went through, I'm trying to think, I know he had a couple of situations in there. I think the leaving Team Penske and James Finch, that was another one. I think he drove for him.
That's
and then
right.
Billy
Phoenix
Blue in the Truck Series. There you go. to understanding that and being appreciative of whatever ride he is in and making the most of it.
I think he might have been at Front Row Motorsports too. Or not Front Row, what is it? Yeah, Front Row Furniture.
That was
wasn't
the Furniture
there?
Row, not the Furniture
Row.
Yeah, that's the one where I said.
That's what it was.
Yeah, him and Regan Smith, I think, were the ones to get them their first victories. Actually, I think it was Kurt Busch got them the first top five. That was a road course in Sonoma. And then I think Regan maybe got him the first victory at Darlington, if I recall correctly. That's why I say he was mm-hmm. part of that led to that Martin Truex championship with that team. You're right.
That's right.
And that's what he brings to the team. And I know I say even Dave Moody talked about it. I mean, he just elevates every team he comes to. He has picked up a lot of victories for these teams, but even if it's not a win, it is still just the evolution of and raising of their program that is the big contribution.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on now to talk about this victory for Kurt Busch. It's the third annual Advent Health 400 at Kansas Speedway. Kurt Busch is now 43 years old. Gosh, that difference is impossible. Driving the number 45 Jordan brand Toyota with owner Michael Jordan. How cool is that? And crew chief Billy Scott. It was his 34th victory in 769 Cup Series races, his first victory in 5th top 10 finish this year, and his first victory in 14th top 10 finish in 33 races at Kansas Speedway. Kyle Larson finished in 2nd place, posting his 7th top 10 finish in 15 races at Kansas, and his 7th top 10 finish this year. Kyle Busch, the two Kyles right behind him, posted his 14th top 10 finish in 29 races at Kansas Speedway. Austin Cindric finished 11th. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Kurt Busch in an event that was fraught with pit road mistakes and mechanical issues, Kurt Busch ran an impeccable race in an intensely competitive run to the finish of Sunday's Advent Health 400 at Kansas Speedway. He nosed past the leader Kyle Larson at the finish line on lap 259 of 267 and completed the pass two corners later off turn two as Larson scraped the outside wall. You mentioned that earlier. Again, the win was his first of the year and the first at Kansas Speedway for him, which is pretty cool. Larson was followed by Kyle Busch. Then it was Denny Hamlin, the pole winner, Kristen Bell, and Martin Truex Jr., the number one of Chastain, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Alex Bowman, and Bubba Wallace rounding out the top 10 finishers. Busch led most laps on the day at 116 and took the lead from Larson with just 8 laps remaining. He pulled away for a 1.4-second margin of victory. Stage 1 was won by Kyle Busch. Stage 2 was won by Kurt Busch. There were 18 lead changes among 10 drivers, 8 cautions for 47 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 124.476 miles per hour. A big win for Kurt Busch. Your thoughts about the race results there?
Yeah, there's a lot of them there. I look at Denny Hamlin. I know that's one of the hot topics Mike had put up. We'll talk about him getting a top 5 finish. Christopher Bell, one of those we see laying in the weeds, if you will. And I know, Sharon, you got another topic, how many winners we'll see. That comes into mm-hmm. play. Good run for Ricky Stenhouse Jr., coming home in the 8th place, and then Bubba Wallace. And a couple of them tie into what you mentioned, pit road issues. And I know that Bubba Wallace and Denny Hamlin, one ties together in Mike's hot topic. So we'll get to those here in about 10 minutes. But good runs. yes, we saw some teams. Chase Elliott being one of them, I think, and Tyler Reddick, I believe, which were my two drivers for the weekend. Thank you very much. have some issues. There were some tire issues already back in practice. I'm not sure what was leading to that. But then to see these teams that don't have that problem or overcome it and capitalize.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these drivers even overcame it and still got the top finishes like Bubba Wallace. So good to see these teams. And the other one you mentioned, the rookie of the year, Austin Cindric. I know he came out, won the Daytona 500, has a victory right now. We talked about this a couple of years ago when we talked about how many winners we're going to get. That win, we think winning you're in, it is possible that you could have a win and still not get in. Austin Cindric, when we look at the points, I'll see where he's at, has a victory, but I think he is still maybe, he might have gotten back inside. He was outside the top 16. If we get 15 winners and the points leader doesn't have a victory, we could see that win not get you into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely possible. And the one driver who is most vulnerable right now, if that happens, is Denny Hamlin. So we'll talk about that more in a little bit. But I want to do a couple shout-outs here as well. Noah Gregson had an 18th place finish in his car this weekend, the number 16 for Colleg Racing. There were BJ McLeod had a chassis issue. His race ended after 32 laps. And Justin Haley had an electrical issue, ending his day after just 64 laps. So a couple of drivers having some issues there mechanically, but a lot of drivers did have some pit road issues that really impacted their day. That was disappointing for sure. And I know we're talking about that during our Hot Topics conversation as well. So it's for 10 o'clock discussion there.
Well, you're leaving one out there, and that would be Erik Jones. I think it took him the majority of that race. If you got one lug nut and it stuck, you got a problem. I don't even know what tools they all use to try and pull that lug nut, that wheel off the right rear. That is one of those I don't know that you will ever see again to that degree. They spent that entire race trying to get one lug nut and wheel off.
They certainly did. And I learned some things about the lug nuts today listening to SiriusXM radio, but I'll save that for our Hot Topic discussion because I think it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. Okay. Any other thoughts there, or do you want to go to the points?
Well, we'll slide over to the points. You already gave the one shout out there. For me, it was going to be directly to Mike of my pick as well, but we could have done better by actually having taken Noah Gregson with that Colleg Racing team, as our drivers had some issues there. But good run by Noah Gregson there in one of his limited cup starts for Colleg Racing. All right, to the point standings. Chase Elliott is your points leader, up 52 points overall when it comes to the standings, and I'll tie this back to something in a minute. Does have the one race win now, two stage wins, seven playoff points built up. Ryan Blaney, second in points at 52 back, does have four stage wins for four playoff points. Third is Kyle Busch, one victory, one stage win. I didn't realize that. That was Kyle Busch's first stage win of the year. That was a little shocking, but has six playoff points built up. William Byron, two race wins, 13 playoff points, and Ross Chastain, the other one with two victories, at 12 playoff points. So those are your top two playoff points getters right now. Martin Truex, no wins, sits in sixth spot, three stage wins for three playoff points. Then you got Joey Logano, Alex Bowman, and Kyle Larson, seventh, eighth, and ninth. And their lines all read the same. One win, one stage win. Each has six playoff points. Mentioned a good run there for Christopher Bell is in 10th. Kevin Harvick, Eric Almirola, and Austin Dillon through 13th. Zeros across the board there. Then you got Chase Briscoe in 14th. Has a win and a stage win, six playoff points. Tyler Reddick right now in 15th. No race wins. You've come close, but no race wins yet. Two stage wins for two playoff points. Now, here's where it becomes important. Austin Cindric now is in 16th. It's tight. So right now he's in with the points and the win in 16th, and that establishes the cut line. But he's at 291. Erik Jones, unfortunately, with that race, 290. Kurt Busch is now the one we're talking about with the victory. One win, one stage win. Oh, there it sounds like it worked.
Yeah.
For six.
Sorry, I was checking that out. It is working.
No, that's good. Kurt Busch in 18th would jump in at this point, which would push out Austin Cindric, which would put him back in, which means Tyler Reddick and Chase Briscoe. I'm sorry, Tyler Reddick and Austin Dillon. Sounds like last year. The 13th and 15th, if they need that victory and don't get up into points. I take that back. Wow, this is – you. I apologize, Sharon, you were right. Denny Hamlin, I didn't realize that. He was that far back. 20th in points has a victory. So that means three because, wow. That would go up to Eric Almirola then in 12th in points at 322. The 16th in points is 291. 31 points, and Eric Almirola is actually technically on the bubble up in 12th with Kurt Busch and Denny Hamlin being out and Austin Cindric in 16th because he'd be the first one to technically be pushed out but would lock back in. Wow. That's blowing my mind now.
Isn't that crazy?
So, yeah, come Thursday, we're gonna have to break this down come Thursday on our preview show because that's gonna be extremely tight watching that playoff bubble here in the Cup Series.
And you know
we got drivers.
We also talked about Brad Keselowski. If he gets a win, right now he's 31st in the points. That win will not get him in. He has to be in the top 30 to be able to get in. So Brad Keselowski is another one to watch.
You're right, and we've seen, again, some good runs, and we got some super speedway races coming up. You're right, that whether or not that win would get them up into the playoffs, and right now that would put four on that outside that would move up. And that's if we don't get any other first-time winners from below the line. We've seen Erik Jones have some good runs, could get the victory. Daniel Suarez with Trackhouse Racing come close. We know that they're on fire with Trackhouse Racing. Then you got Chris Buescher, Bubba Wallace, you know, and we got some of the what we call wild cards. Cole Custer, a former race winner in 27th. So we could really see, and I know we're getting close to Hot Topics time, and that's one of them, this become an issue of that first time that we have a race winner not get into the playoffs.
I think it's certainly possible this year, looking at the report here. So anyway, I thought the racing was fantastic this past weekend at Kansas Speedway. And it does sound like it was a dominating race, but we heard Zane Smith talk about it. It sounds like it's dominating when you look at the stats, but it is not easy for these drivers to win these races. They still have to work at it even when they dominate the race, and especially when there are restarts involved. So I think the racing this year has been fantastic in all the series.
It has been, and I think just mentioning that, this was the goal of the next-gen car. We're seeing the parity, a little closer competition. Again, we still have William Byron and Ross Chastain, which Ross Chastain may be one that kind of capitalized on that, but those two with two victories, we aren't seeing that multiple winner having four, five, six victories. Go back to Kyle Larson having picked up 10 last year. So I think it's going to be a really tight playoff cut line, as we were just talking about. As I was reading it, it was just throwing me for a loop because it is that tight and what could happen.
Okay. Well, Jay, we are at the top of the hour, and that means it's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And we have a couple of players here to join us for this conversation. And we've touched on it all night long throughout our review show. So let's bring in our Fan for Racing crew member first. We'll start with Tommy Kraft. Welcome back, Tommy. It's good to have you on our Hot Topics tonight.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back. Glad to be back home.
Okay. And also we have a guest on our Hot Topics tonight. He's visited with us before, and he's back again. We have Chris Crichton here to talk with us about Hot Topics tonight on our Fan for Racing radio show. Welcome, Chris.
Well, hello, Miss Sharon. Hello. Glad to be on again tonight.
Well, I'm thankful that you were available to step into one of our open spots here tonight. And we have a lot of hot topics to talk about. I'll start with Tommy. But before I do that, I want to just do a quick test again. I tested earlier. We're having some audio issues for some of our listeners. And I want to just go back and test both at fanforracing.com and Blog Talk Radio. When I tested this earlier, it was working.
Part of that building. What?
Okay, there it is. It is working at fanforracing.com. Let me go back and listen here at Blog Talk Radio. And it is working there. So I know we had some issues with that earlier. It seems as though it is fixed now, so hopefully all of our listeners are able to tune in for our conversation. Okay, Tommy, if you will go ahead and get us started on tonight's hot topic.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go with Kurt Busch winning the Kansas race this past weekend for Jordan in the 45 car. And I believe you posted a link. It says why Kurt Busch is a perfect drop for Michael Jordan's team.
Oh, okay. Chris, we'll hear what you have to say about that, too. The win was Kurt Busch this weekend from Michael Jordan, and why he's the perfect driver for that team.
Well, of course, anytime that you're creating a franchise, you want to go out and you want to get the best veteran you can. And Kurt Busch has been a proven winner at every single organization he's driven for, except I believe the only win that he didn't get one at is with James Finch. But he was mighty close a couple of times, especially at the road courses. So Kurt Busch has that never-give-up attitude. And it's quite interesting how over the last decade he's gone from villain to, a driver well-respected in the garage.
Okay. And, Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, Sharon and I were having a tough time not leading into this too much as we were doing the review and talking about this. And, you know, Dave Moody had it out on his tweet of Kurt Busch being that driver. You mentioned veteran driver that can just come in and elevate your program and take it to another level. And yeah, it has taken that time, as Chris there mentioned, a villain to hero, if you will. And he admitted that, you know, he had to go through that maturation stage. And we've seen that, and to know that he can be counted on. To pick up a victory while carrying the Jordan brand for Team 2311, you couldn't script that any better. I know a lot of people were talking about that paint scheme as a phenomenal paint scheme, and I thought it was pretty cool myself. But to have somebody like Jordan come in, not just as an owner, but then as with his own company and the Jordan brand to invest his sponsorship and get rewarded like that, just is huge. I mean, that shows what that kind of deal can work for sponsorship. And you mentioned it of not just for elevating the team, mentor to Bubba Wallace. We saw that already early in the year of what Bubba Wallace said. Hey, Kurt came and showed me some things I can improve on. The dedication he has to watching tapes and stuff and improving. And when we talked about it in his post-race interview that we listened to tonight, calculating, saying, okay, I know I'm gaining on him in turn two. That's my spot. I'm going to take 10 laps to work my way up. So when I get to turn two, that's where I'm going to get him, to have that kind of driver mentality. And then the feedback and what he builds with the team to elevate it so he has the car capable to do that.
That's absolutely right. You guys have really said a lot in just a short amount of time, you wish. And I'm going to just kind of add to that. Bubba Wallace, by the way, came home with the top 10 finish this weekend. And he credited Kurt Busch with helping to support him. But also, I saw on Twitter earlier today, and Kyle Busch gets noticed for this quite a lot, being a mentor for other drivers in the sport and helping them to develop. Noah Gregson put out a thank you to Kyle Kurt Busch this weekend, and to say, or I don't know if he did it this weekend or on Monday, but he said thank you to Kurt Busch for all the support that he's given him. He's another driver that has had to go through a maturity curve, if you will. And he thanked Kurt Busch for being a mentor to him. So Kurt Busch is doing that as well. And I think he gets underrated for how much he supports other drivers, not just within his own team, but outside of his own team as well. And he's done that throughout his career, by the way. Chris, you mentioned it, the fact that he's been with so many different teams and elevated those teams, as Jay also mentioned. He doesn't just go into those teams and ride around. He is in there to help that team become better and to help drivers become better, including himself. So I think Kurt Busch has really matured significantly over the years. We've watched him for a couple of decades here, I guess, and his maturity has really paid off in spades for all these different organizations, but also the manufacturers. He's won in every manufacturer, Ford, Toyota, Chevrolet, and Dodge. So it doesn't matter what car you put him in, he's going to make that organization better. He's going to make that car better, and he's going to become a better driver himself. And one thing we heard in his post-race interview is how he studied Kyle Larson and looked where his best opportunity to pass him would be. And I think that's a sign of a mature veteran driver of this sport as well. And he did a good job of making that pass and going after that victory. So Tommy, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, great win for 23XI. That's huge. Bubba also finished in the top 10. It's also a big moment for Denny Hamlin. It was awesome to see that paint scheme get to victory lane because it was the paint scheme of the weekend, I think. And it's awesome to see the Jordan shoe brand, the Jumpman logo, get a win. If I feel like this was the first time it was on the car. So it's also important that the 45 car won. That was Kyle Petty's number and Adam Petty's number back in the day. So that's another huge, huge thing. I'm sure the Petty fans are glad to see that car back in victory lane. Huge for MJ also. I mean, maybe he comes to a race now and Kurt or Bubba will put him in victory lane while he's at the racetrack, because that would be awesome to see MJ celebrate with the team. But, it's crazy that Kurt Busch has gone from the 97 Roush car to the number 2 Penske car, which was a Dodge at the time, and Roush was obviously a Ford. So if we could go back in time and put him in a Pontiac, I'm sure he'd get a win, and then we'd then we'd have almost all victories for Kurt Busch to add to the Chevy and Dodge and Ford and now Toyota list. So, it's just crazy. And he didn't even race in the Xfinity Series. He went from the trucks right to the Cup level, And he did run some Xfinity. He, of course, he's ran Xfinity races now, but he went from straight from truck to cup, and he's got 30-some wins in a championship. He's won in all four car manufacturers. He's won in all three series. I say he has a case for the Hall of Fame. I mean, Matt Kenseth got in on the first vote around. I don't see why Kurt Busch wouldn't. And also, Kurt Busch, he went through a little bit of an attitude adjustment period. I hope he passes it on to Kyle. And, yeah, it's actually now that Newman's gone, I'm holding on to Kevin Harvick and Kurt Busch. Please do not leave. Please do not retire. Race a few more years. Don't retire yet.
Okay. Chris, your follow-up comments.
I'll follow up with what Tommy said about the Jumpman brand being on the car and how significant that is for the sport. We brought in a minority owner, and in 2 years of that team, there's been two victories. This one can be legitimized. Everybody understands that super speedway racing is a toss-up. It's a crapshoot, but now Bubba puts himself in a place to be up front, and he's proved that time and time again at the super speedways. So with Kurt Busch's win, it just shows that this team is for real, and Michael Jordan has made a good investment. He's brought in the right people because it's in a tough world that NASCAR has become to have an owner come into the sport and within 2 years have two victories. The track house and 2311 are making it look easy compared to other teams like Yen Racing and even Evernham. I mean, all these teams have look how long it took Furniture Row to become a successful race team. So but it's amazing for the Jumpman brand as well, because I mean, this is a leap and bound situation with Michael Jordan, and once again it pays off. And the community, the basketball community, the world, every time Michael Jordan does something, the world pays attention. So that's my follow-up.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
Well, I love having the different people here on the show. Tommy just hit on something else that I know got talked about a little bit, but he just brought back up. Kurt talked about it, the number 45. Yeah, that was what Jordan wanted to bring to the team, but they went to the Petty family and asked for that number out of respect. And Adam Petty just actually, his birthday had just passed. And I think Kurt mentioned that in the post-race as well, to be able to carry that, not just for Jordan and for that, but for the Petty team and Adam Petty as well, because we hadn't seen that number on track since Adam Petty had driven it. So that was another bonus to that throughout the weekend. And I don't know what more could be said. We've talked about it. The one thing I will add that got added, I know on Twitter, you look at what Kurt Busch did when he did the Coca-Cola 600 and the Indianapolis 500, picking up a sixth place finish at the Indy 500. Shows what kind of driver. I know there was talk of him going to Formula One with Haas before he left Chip Ganassi and come over to Haas Racing and then moving on from there. And that might still be a possibility, like we've seen Jimmy Johnson do. He is just that talented. And I think somebody, I don't remember who said it, about being kind of an underrated driver. We just talked about Matt Kenseth getting into the Hall of Fame. And I know I was one. I said I was surprised he went in as early as he did on the first ballot. But Kurt Busch is one of those too. Has a championship. Has, mid-range as far as total career victories. But what he has done for the sport, and we've gone through all the different teams that he has helped build their program, that's the kind of thing that really does put you into the Hall of Fame. Not flashy of, seven championships, say, as Earnhardt Petty or Jimmy Johnson, but not to be taken away from nonetheless.
Absolutely. And my follow-up, I want to just mention, I'm from the Chicago area, And I remember the Michael Jordan days with the Chicago Bulls. And I will tell you, Michael Jordan elevated every team player on the Bulls. He expects a lot of himself, but he expects a lot from his teammates as well. And he knew how to motivate them and encourage them to be better than they ever thought that they could be. So I see that happening with Michael Jordan, and that's why I think that Kurt Busch is also a perfect fit with Michael Jordan because they have similar personalities in that regard. They elevate the people around them. They elevate the team. They elevate, other drivers. So I do think that this is a perfect matchup, and I agree with everything that you guys are saying about him being a first-round Hall of Famer when the time comes. I don't think he's ready for that just yet. Time will tell the rest of the story in that regard. But I think Kurt Busch still has some business to tend to. And I'm happy for what I see happening at Trackhouse Racing. I'm happy for what I see happening at 2311 Racing. A lot of people were wondering when 2311 would come up with that victory after seeing what was happening at Trackhouse Racing. But both of those teams are raising the bar, if you will, for new teams that are coming in. They are the role models for how to make a championship team or how to make a winning team, at least, in coming into the Cup Series. So I'm really happy. This was a very significant win this weekend with Kurt Busch at Kansas Speedway. And by the way, his first victory at Kansas Speedway ever. So he's raced at a lot of different tracks, and he can add Kansas Speedway as one of those tracks that he's won at, in addition to winning in all three series and all of the other things that we pointed out here tonight. So, Tommy, your wrap-up for this subject.
I believe that's also how many ever consecutive years Kurt Busch has won a race. So he's consistent. I definitely think he has a Hall of Fame case career. I mean, he's a champion. He's got 30-some wins. He's won in all three series, won in all four manufacturers. Roush, Penske, Stuart Haas, Chip Ganassi. Now he's with Michael Jordan. I don't see why he doesn't go into Hall of Fame. But, keep on racing. I'm sure 23XI gets at least one other win this year because Kurt Busch can get it done at a bunch of tracks. You can't count Bubba out at Daytona and Talladega. He's always a threat there. So I definitely see them getting another win for sure, I think. It's awesome to see all these young teams doing good, especially really early. I mean, Trackhouse already has two wins. 23XI has two wins. Future's looking good, and it looks like a veteran of the sport now, no longer a Gillette young gun, is still winning, which is awesome.
Okay. Chris, do you have a hot topic that you would like to discuss with us here tonight?
Yeah, sure. So I read the other day, well, I guess it was yesterday, that this is the first time since 2003 that we've had 11 different winners out of 13 races. That leaves a situation. We've got 12 races left in front of us. There is a major possibility that the win in your end theory may not work out this year. I was interested in knowing you guys' thoughts on whether or not you believe this is a significant situation, or that, you know, we'll basically stay under 16 different winners this season.
Okay, I'll go ahead and give Mike Orzel's thoughts. He did comment on this on our thread and our team's page, and he says it's entirely possible. Everyone kind of has Reddick penciled in to the win column. At some point, Bell has been running better. If Suarez can get over his snake bite, there's also Blaney, Austin Dillon, Eric Jones, and Harvick, all decent possibilities as well. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, this is another one. As we were doing the points recap and I was reading it, I was stumbling through it because I didn't realize how tight and impactful this is. You know, Chris asked if this is significant. It is very significant. We talked about it a little bit. We had 11 early last year, and then Kyle Larson started gobbling up wins and kind of eliminated that. But Michael McDowell was in that position having won the Daytona 500. Now, I mentioned Austin Cindric had worked his way back into the 16th in points, so he's in. But you still have Kurt Busch and Denny Hamlin in 18th and 20th. They move in, which pushes Austin Cindric out. However, he's back in. So we're up to 12th place, Eric Almirola, that would be in jeopardy. And then as Sharon and I were talking, you go down that list, Tyler Reddick in 15th, like Mike said, kind of penciled in for victory. We've seen the runner-up finishes. Eric Jones has had some top five runs, minus this last weekend's lug nut issue, has been much better this year that we've seen them growing. Daniel Suarez, we know what Trackhouse can do. Then you got, where did I go here? 21st in points, Chris Buescher. We know Roush Keselowski Racing, and Keselowski right now needs to get in the top 30 as well. But he's still a possibility. When you come to Super Speedway, you got Justin Haley, Michael McDowell, Ricky Stenhouse right there. Ty Dillon, another one. We've seen some flashes, especially at the short tracks, where they have been competitive. Match as part of GMS Petty Racing and teammate Eric Jones. So we know they're possible. Harrison Burton, yes, he's a rookie and had a rough start, but we know that as part of an alliance with Team Penske that the Wood Brothers have that capability. Cole Custer, previous winner. So there's a Corey LaJoyce, the 130th in points. We've seen him come close in the top five. And we got a couple of wild card road course races yet to come that we've seen. The super speedways are always that way. I really, really, really think this is a possibility. And I hate to say it that I'd hate to see a winner not get in, but think about how exciting that is that you're talking about 17 different winners that even winning a race doesn't lock you in, because that means that's how competitive the Cup Series is, and I love to see that. I hate it for whoever's got the win and doesn't get in, because they won, but, I mean, that to see that kind of competitive field, that's what we want to see. You know, appreciate what Kyle Larson did, picking up 10 victories in a year. Kevin Harvick did it the year before. Phenomenal job, but it's great to see that kind of variety. And I say, big shout-out to NASCAR. I think the next-gen car and narrowing that gap and making it more competitive for all teams, I think, has been a huge factor.
It definitely has been. Tommy, your thoughts about this topic?
Well, just like you guys are saying, it was just like last year at this time. We were talking about how there was 10 or so different winners already in 15 races, and now here we are next year talking about the same thing, which is a good thing. It means that a bunch of different drivers are winning and that it's competitive. And all I can think about is if we keep this rate going, unless if somebody pulls a Kyle Larson or Kevin Harvick, we might have a very interesting Daytona August race. That one's going to be a little, I don't know how to describe it. It's going to be very eventful, to say the least, if they keep it going at this rate. But, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And there's so many drivers that could definitely win. Tyler Reddick has been close this year. He comes to mind. Daniel Suarez has been up front, but he keeps on having something weird happen, like an engine problem or losing a tire. You can't count Justin Haley out at super speedways, and he just finished third at Darlington last week. I wouldn't say you could count out Bubba, because 23XI had two cars in the top 10 this week. So there is – it's a real chance again. And also, too, if we get 16 winners, and last year Denny Hamlin hadn't won yet but had been finishing in the top 5 and 10 consistently enough that he would have been the champion, and somebody would have had their feelings hurt had that been the case. Even though they had a win, they wouldn't have gotten in. So maybe we see that again this year. Maybe we see 15 winners and a champion get in, or the defending season champion get in, or maybe we see 16 winners and a regular season champion that moves somebody out of the way for that last spot. So, but yeah, just like last year at this time, it's crazy, and barring anybody pulling a Kyle Larson, we probably will have 16 different winners, which would be great.
Yeah, I think this is definitely the year, but let me do our announcement before I get into this. We are coming up to the 10:30 time frame, and we do go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. And for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, you're going to hear us go off the air, and we're going to be talking mid-sentence when that happens. Just know that we are recording the rest of that conversation, and it is part of our bonus overtime material that's available on our podcast. So what I'll do is I'll go out on Twitter to let you know that the podcast is now available, and at that point you can fast forward to the two-hour mark and hear the rest of that conversation. So, again, we don't want anybody to be caught off guard and not know how they can hear the rest of the conversation. And so we make this announcement for our first-time listeners at this time of the show. Okay, getting into the 16 winners, I do think it's possible. We have 13 races to go. There are 5 different spots that are available. Only five spots. I think it's highly possible that five different people could win in these next 13 races. Now, what's different between this year and last year? Yeah, we had this conversation last year, but last year we didn't have the next gen car that has brought a lot of parity to the racing this season. And I was thinking about it earlier today. It used to be Talladega was a wild card race. Daytona is a wild card race. Some people still think of road course races as being a kind of a wild card. But I will tell you, I think just about every race is a wild card race anymore, because so many different things can happen throughout a race. And this is one of our hot topics that are coming up. But there were a lot of people who had pit road issues, flat tires. And we'll talk about all the different things that are going on with regard to that when we get to that hot topic. But just about every race is a wild card race anymore. And your team has to be nearly perfect in order to win these races anymore. And on any given day, that can be any given driver. We've seen Chris Buescher have some good runs. We've seen Tyler Reddick knocking on that door. We've seen so many drivers that are knocking on that door that I think it's highly possible we're going to get 5 more different winners in these next 13 races before this is all said and done. Is the intensity going to pick up? Absolutely. You've got drivers like Kevin Harvick. Kevin Harvick may not be in the playoffs. I'm thinking he's going to be knocking on that door of trying to get a victory in these next 13 races, especially given the possibility that you could have one win and still not get in. Brad Keselowski right now 31st in the points. Even if he gets a win, he has to be in the top 30 to be in the playoffs. You talked about displacing some of the drivers that are on the bubble, Jay. That is certainly another possibility that could happen here. You could have drivers that are in the top 16, but they don't get in because they don't have that win. So it can go in reverse as well. I'm really excited about this, and I think the next-gen car has created a situation for NASCAR that is going to give a lot of fans a lot of reasons to be at the racetrack and to be tuning in to see what's going to happen next and who's going to be the next different winner to win this season. So it's all good from where I sit. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you look at each of the organizations, Stuart Haas, they have Kevin Harvick, Eric Amarola, you know, Cole Custer could pull him off one. You've got JGR, you know, you've got Christopher Bell and Martin Truex that have not won. Those are four to five drivers right there. You know, you have Richard Childress, who's been knocking on the door with his two drivers, Austin Dillon and Tyler Reddick. Of course, we're all waiting for the Tyler Reddick moment, right? I mean, we thought it would have already happened by now. But, you know, we get excited. We think, okay, this is going to happen. And then what always happens toward the middle of the season? Well, we get into a rhythm. And if you look at the stats right now, Hendrick Motorsports, they're sitting there with, six victories on the year. You know, we're just going to see that tally up, right? We're going to see William Byron get him a couple more wins. We're going to see Kyle Larson win. You know, is Alex Bowman going to pop off another one? You know, who else is there? there's Chase Elliott.
Chase Elliott.
Right. He just picked up his win. So, you know, we know Hendrick Motorsports is going to win probably at least a third to half of these races that are coming up. JGR is finally hitting on all cylinders. It looked like Toyota found something at Kansas, so you kind of got to get excited. Martin Truex Jr. should be knocking on the door there, but I think we're going to run out of time, as we always do. It's going to be close. I think last year we did get 17 winners, right, because Bubba Wallace won in the playoffs. It just didn't count towards that number. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're knocking on that door to do it this year, but you know, most of the time when we're going to these tracks for the second time, we've traditionally seen the drivers that have already won start accumulating more wins. So, you know, I think strategically it could happen, but for the most part, just having this kind of exciting beginning of a year where we've seen these different winners and the guys have, you know, kind of made an early bid for the playoffs. You know, it's given us a lot of interesting content so far in this 2022 race season.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
Well, normally Sharon, it's on one of us to represent Mike. Chris did it tonight. I don't know if you're aware of it. But Hendrick Motorsports right now is that powerhouse. And we look at it going back a week, William Byron could have more than his two victories. As I think about that, Ross Chastain actually had a couple of spots where he maybe could have had one or two more. The one thing, as I bring those particular drivers up, that incident with Joey Logano and William Byron, Joey Logano saying, hey, I got to get this victory. You know, Sharon and I know, we've had separate conversations about this as well as on Hot Topic. You know, that does elevate that I got to win possibly at any cost mentality. And I know that, Sharon, you must have been listening to SiriusXM at the same time I was this morning to hear him talk about that of, you know, that it really is. I mean, we're seeing it. You got the victory, but you're outside the points. You know, Denny Hamlin, Kurt Busch, and Austin Cindric, you know, that's not even secured them as of yet. So there is that mentality of I got to get the victory just to get in the playoffs, and that might not even be enough. So that's kind of what's elevated that thought process and that aggression when it comes to picking up a victory. And then the other thing, as we were going through all that, Tommy was talking about it. Right now, Ryan Blaney is second in points, 52 points behind Chase Elliott. If he were to be the points leader, not have a victory, he would still be guaranteed the spot. So there again, that could come into play. It might only be 15 race winners if the points leader happens to not have a victory. And Ryan Blaney is up near the top in that position And then I think it was Chris pointed out Martin Truex is 6th in points, the next one down without a victory. So there is still that possibility of it could even only be 15 race winners that are eligible. I would have thought it happened in the truck series first at 10-10. We've seen 8 and 9 victors get in. But we could really realistically see it here in the Cup Series. And like I said, I feel bad for somebody that gets a win and doesn't get in the playoffs, but I'm excited by that possibility because that means there is top, tough competition on the track.
Yeah, it doesn't get much tougher. Tommy?
Yeah, I'm just excited to see who is going to win some of these races that we keep on talking about and to round out the season this year. One that I was going to add that y'all had already talked about was Brad Kay. Cannot count him out at Daytona and Talladega coming up, especially with how the penalty affected him this year. So, you know, he's definitely going to try to sneak a win in where anywhere possible, especially since he's a new team owner. Trying to definitely get us his car victory lane. So I know he's going to be aggressive. There is a real chance again. We talked about it last year. It didn't happen, so maybe it happens this year. But all it's going to take is for one guy to start dominating, and that chance will go away. But we'll see. But it's definitely a good thing that all these cars are competitive and doing well because it makes everything interesting, that's for sure. And that Daytona August race is going to be wild.
Exactly right. I think this is going to be wild for the next 13 races, to be honest with you. Even if Chase Elliott, William Byron, Alex Bowman, and Kyle Larson all get another win this season, that's 4 out of the 13 races. That still leaves 9 races for 5 different winners. So even if they get multiple wins, I think it's still an open possibility for 5 more different winners this season. And you brought up Brad Keselowski right now, 31st in points. If he's able to get a win and put himself in the top 30, I think he's going to need a second win in order to guarantee a spot into the playoffs. And we've been kind of saying that right from the very beginning because of the possibility. Justin Haley right now is 23 in points. He's, you know, another one. Cole Custer's 27 in points right now. These guys might need more than one win in order to get into the playoffs this season because they're so far back in the points. But the other vulnerability, and I'll mention this again, you've got drivers like, let's start with Christopher Bell. Right now he's 10th, no wins yet. Kevin Harvick, no wins yet. Eric Almirola, no wins. Austin Dillon, no win. Chase Briscoe has a win. He might need a second one. Tyler Reddick has no wins yet. Those are the drivers, in addition to Martin Truex, who's 6th, and Ryan Blaney, who's 2nd. Those drivers, if they don't get a win, they can be displaced out of the top 16 by those drivers that are below 16th in points, that have a win. Drivers like Kurt Busch, who's right now 18th. Denny Hamlin, who's 20th in the points. If those drivers have a win and can displace right now, that would be Tyler Reddick, and that would be Austin Dillon, who set 15th and 13th in the points. They could be displaced out of the top 16 by those drivers who have that win below that cut line. So I really think that this year is going to, these next 13 races are all going to be enormously competitive. And I do think that these guys are going to do a lot. I hope they continue to race like Kurt Busch raced this weekend and showcase their talent. I know we've got this as another hot topic, so I won't get too much into that. But I do think that some of these drivers are going to need more than one win in order to secure their spot into the playoffs this year. And again, with the fans have a lot of reasons to tune into each and every one of these next 13 races. And then it's going to be more of the same when we get down to the last 10 races of the season and the playoff starts. Chris, you get to wrap it up.
Yes. I mean, just tell me what other sport has 11 out of 13 different winners. I mean, you know, and I'll wait for that answer, because you're not going to find any other sport in racing with that kind of parity.
Okay. Well said. Kay, it is Jay's turn to bring up the next hot topic.
Well, this is one Mike brought up, and I think kind of ties into a couple of things we've been talking about. Let me scroll up here and read how he put it. Oh, okay. It says, no link. It's my own thoughts. Is it time for Denny Hamlin to retire from driving to focus on 2311? And Sharon, you want me to wait to read his comments and backing to it, or you want to do that on a return trip?
Yeah, go ahead and read his comments now, and then we'll go to our next person.
Okay, it says the number 11 has had speed, but execution has been a problem for him. It's not all on Denny Hamlin, since, of course, he can't control things like leaving a wheel off at Dover, but it's pretty clear his focus is elsewhere. Chris Gabbert even had to chastise him over the radio about asking about the 23 during the race while under caution. And it really looks like Denny's primary focus is the two car he owns, but he doesn't drive. So should he retire at the end of the season, contract permitting, I suppose, so he can focus fully on building 2311 into what he clearly wants them to be?
Okay, Tommy, your first step on this hot topic.
Yes, so, I mean, last year at this time, I believe Denny was leading the points and hadn't won a race yet either. And then this year he's already got a win, so he's already in, unless this, like we've been discussing, 17 drivers win, then he might be out. But I can see where Mike's coming from, but I can also see why Denny is, you know, doing what he's doing. I mean, he does own a car with MJ, so it's going to be hard for him not to do the checkups and all that stuff. Is it a distraction for him? Possibly. I could definitely see that. I think Joe Gibbs is going to have a decision to make this year for Ty Gibbs. I mean, I think that Ty Gibbs is going to be a rookie next year for either. The only one that I think is safe that everybody would have thought would have not been safe is Christopher Bell. But Kyle Busch has an attitude problem, and M&M's is leaving. So Ty Gibbs could go to the 18 car. That one makes the most sense to me, because that is Joe Gibbs' original car, and that could be possibly where Ty goes. Then there's Denny Hamlin, who could retire, or the other option, I see him going to either the 23 or 45 car, but we'll see how that goes, because Bubba won last year, and Kurt Busch has a win this year. So, I mean, why change anything if that's going well? So, and then there's Martin Truex Jr., who could also retire, and then that could be Ty Gibbs' car. But as for Denny, that's just interesting. I mean, does he retire so he can focus on owning the team with Michael Jordan, or does he still race for the 11 car, or does he race for his own team and kick Kurt or Bubba out? I really have no clue. I could see any of those three happening, honestly. It really could work out that way for any of those options that I just mentioned in my opinion. But yeah, time will tell for that one for sure. But Denny could also get it turned around. I mean, he's one of the best out there. He could win the next couple races. He could pull a Kyle Larson, and that'll put an end to the retirement talk. So who knows how this one will go.
Okay, Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of parts to that I'd like to chime in on, of course. I did hear in live broadcast that Denny had questioned where one of his cars was, and right then and there it was kind of like a red flag as an owner. You know, Joe Gibbs is kind of put into a situation there, right? Because with Denny wondering where his other teams, where his team is, that could make or break how Denny Hamlin's going to race somebody, right? I mean, you know, and that was a little bit out of line there by Denny, and maybe that's going to be where things start to crumble. But now, the proof's in the pudding, right? There's a reason why the team's called 2311, right? We never really put together that, you know, that's Michael Jordan's number and the 11 is Denny's number. So is that really Denny's number? Like, if he goes and races for himself, does he bring the 11 car with him? And we know that the franchise, that the idea for 2311 is to become eventually a four-car powerhouse. So they're building a building that's going to house four charters. That's the goal anyway. So, you know, Denny went out on his own to basically say, hey, I'm not going to get caught like some of these other drivers and not have a place to go when I'm given the axe. So we've seen that with Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart made his own way, you know. Keselowski, he basically the same thing, right? You're not going to tell me when to retire. I'm going to invest into a team. You know, Denny Hamlin built this team from scratch. He brought an outside investor who just happens to be Michael Jordan. Of course I believe Denny Hamlin will eventually leave Joe Gibbs and drive for his own race team. Talking about retirement, I think that's a little bit too young for Denny. He's definitely going to try to chase the championship for as long as he can. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, really the question is whether or not they're searching for that third charter and whether or not Joe Gibbs wants to pull the trigger similar to what Hendrick Motorsports did 4 or 5 years ago, right? When the Hendrick had the whole house cleaning and people were like, oh, it's daddy daycare for Jimmy Johnson. Well, Christopher Bell could be the baby face of Joe Gibbs Racing could very well possibly be Senior Frog in the next couple of years with some decisions. And let me tell you something. Joe Gibbs is the NFL coach, right? And we know what the NFL is right stands for, right? Do we all know? Not for long. So Joe Gibbs does not have that. He doesn't have that type of mentality towards it. Tell me what driver has retired other than Carl Edwards in the middle of the season from Joe Gibbs Racing. I don't think I can name a single one.
Okay. You bring up some great points, and I was actually thinking along those lines as well, Chris, is that there's nothing to say that Denny Hamlin doesn't leave Joe Gibbs Racing and go directly to 2311. And race for his own race team. That would be an interesting thing. I think Tony Stewart did that in the beginning, didn't he? Didn't he race at Stewart House Racing for a couple of years before he actually retired? I see Denny Hamlin maybe going down that same path. You bring up an interesting question. I don't know if maybe that was part of the agreement from the beginning, that Denny Hamlin would take the 11 with him if he leaves Joe Gibbs Racing. But you're right. He opened up a can of worms this weekend by bringing up the 23 car while driving the number 11 for Joe Gibbs Racing. And Chris Gabehart called him on that. So that is something that I'm sure Joe Gibbs is having a conversation with Denny this week about exactly that. It's going to be interesting to see how this does play out, if Denny Hamlin retires completely or if he goes in as a driver when he makes that transition from Joe Gibbs Racing over to his own race team. There's challenges that come along with that, of course, as we saw with Tony Stewart. I think you're right. 2311 isn't looking to stay as a two-car race team. The possibility of them becoming a three-car race team could be imminent. So we'll have to see how that continues to play out. And you guys, Ty Gibbs, honestly, I hope and I pray that Ty Gibbs does not move out of the Xfinity Series to soon. I think it could hold the potential of ruining his career if he does that too soon. He's demonstrated already this season that he has some maturity concerns. I think it would do him good to be in the Xfinity Series for at least an additional year beyond this season, if not 2 years, so that he can go through that maturity curve, if you will, and before he gets into the Cup level of racing. Because I'm telling you, if he does in the Cup Series what he's done in the Xfinity Series to get wins, I do think some of those veteran drivers will kind of sit him in his place. And honestly, I don't think that would be good for Ty Gibbs. I don't think he wants to continue that reputation going into the Cup Series. I think he has some maturing to do. And look at the maturing that Kurt Busch did. Ty Gibbs has the potential to be a Hall of Fame driver with the way he started out his career. But he's got to get some wins that showcase his talent versus bumping drivers out of the way to get those wins. I know Joey Logano doesn't make any excuses for him doing it that way. I think Joey Logano made a mistake last week because he could have won that race without bumping William Byron, and he didn't do it. That was a perfect opportunity to take the higher road in that case and showcase his talent. And I lost some respect for Joey Logano for not doing that. So I do think it's going to be interesting to see how this does play out. We have to see what happens. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, to answer the question, do I think he ought to retire? Absolutely not. We see he can still be competitive. You mentioned last year he was the top guy, although he didn't have the win, the top guy without a win, consistently top five. A few years back, I thought he was on the verge. When he went winless and really seemed to be struggling, he came back. He had three wins, I believe, and was a championship contender last year yet again. This year, you look at Joe Gibbs Racing as a whole. I don't think it's Denny Hamlin or that 11 team that is the one that is struggling. Toyota has kind of struggled a little bit with this next-gen car. We see Truex doesn't have a win yet. We see Denny Hamlin have one victory, but again, picked up a top five this past weekend. They got some pit road issues and things like that. Kyle Busch only has the one victory. So I can't say that that's a distraction. Yes, he asked about it. It was under caution. I think, Sharon, I know you listen to in-car cameras throughout or in-car radios during a race. There's drivers, they're singing, they're asking about what's for dinner, ice cream. Okay, I don't see that as a big deal as far as that under caution. I think he did catch the fact that they were a top-running team, and all of a sudden they weren't there, and he noticed that. Why did they drop down the board? Okay, yes, he's got that focus of what happened to him. Okay, it's a pit crew issue yet again. We need to address that as far as me being the team owner. But he went back. He got a top five finish. So are you saying if he hadn't been distracted, he would have won? I don't know. But I don't see it as a big deal. I understand that the crew chief was just saying, hey, let's keep your mind back on racing. But I don't see it as a whole. That's why that team isn't winning and all this. Now, when you talk about, I do think, I'm with most of you, I think that eventually he does drive for his own team. But I will say this, when you're talking about it being a distraction, I think if you were to ask Tony Stewart that it is more of a distraction when you are driving for your own team that you're also trying to run. At least when you're driving for somebody else, they're the ones taking care of the car. Yes, you got to communicate and be a part of that team, but you don't have to be as hands-on because you're not the owner. You're not the one in charge of it. You're not the one doing the sponsorship deals, okay? Now, if you're the driver and that, you know, Tony's talked about that. That was a little more difficult, and why when he chose to stop racing, he could focus strictly on that. He doesn't have to be at the shop. You know, people question that, at the track or at the shop. He's doing his role as just the owner. So I think driving for your own team and then worrying about driving and owning is more of a distraction than if you're driving for somebody else And I'm not saying he doesn't care about the Joe Gibbs race cars and equipment, but that's not then his responsibility entirely for that. So Brad Keselowski would be another one to kind of get that feedback on now, being that he's driving for a team he's also in an executive with. So, no, I don't think he needs to retire right now. Like I said, I don't see that as his problems are because his mind is elsewhere. Maybe he shouldn't have asked about it like that. Or I don't see that as really that big a deal. That I've heard some other comments, like I said, while they're racing. You know, if it, and truthfully, if you're focused of, oh, who hit me 30 laps ago and I'm going to wreck them, that's more of a distraction than anything else, because then you're got red in your eyes. So, you know, at least he wasn't focused on wrecking somebody on the track. I mean, if you think about it from that aspect. And I do, we'll see what 2311 builds into. I don't think they're ready, obviously, with Kurt getting this win and being such a team-building veteran there, pushing him or Bubba Wallace out yet. I'm not going to say there isn't some concern there, but as they've said, we're not providing them what they need to get the job done, so we can't say it's the driver. Just as Mike said, it's not necessarily the driver for Denny Hamlin's case. So I don't see that. I think they would have to go the route of getting another charter or expanding from a different avenue rather than pushing somebody out.
Okay, Tommy, your follow-up?
I think we bring up an interesting point with being 2311. So I would not be the least bit surprised if Joe Gibbs would agree to it. It would be cool to see Denny in the 11 car, Bubba in the 23 car, and Kurt in the 45 car. And that would be the ideal, perfect scenario for every NASCAR fan. We'll see if we get it, but I'm about like you guys. I mean, I can see Denny retiring to focus on 23XI, but at the same time, I mean, he's already got a win this year. He still doesn't have a championship. I don't see him giving up yet. So we'll just have to see who he ends up driving for next year, I guess.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll take you way back to the Lance McGrew days at Hendrick Motorsports. I remember a Dale Jr. asking a Washington Redskins football score, and the papers went crazy. Dale Jr.'s not—he's not dedicated. He's distracted, and all this other. And come to find out, I mean, he kind of really was distracted, and he got his career back on track. And he'll admit that was a difficult time. I think criticism is okay right now for Denny Hamlin as he juggles the two, because obviously he drives for one of the very few sponsors that picks up the whole season, guys. That's different than what these other guys have for sponsorships throughout the year. The Joe Gibbs model is, you know, FedEx has the whole season and they can do what they want to with the car. Very few sponsors are available like that, and it doesn't look good for Denny. It does not look good for Denny. He's supposed to have those people in place so that he doesn't have to worry about that.
Yes, and you know, Denny Hamlin kind of did take some of the blame. He said, we've made some mistakes, and it's not the driver's fault, it's our fault. We need to give them better support. So he's already acknowledged that there are some improvement opportunities with 2311, even though they've got the two wins in 2 years. Is he ready to retire? I don't think he's ready to retire. I think we're talking more long-term, and I hope he doesn't retire. I think Denny Hamlin wants to get a championship. I think that what might play into his thinking about retirement is whether he thinks he can get that championship with Joe Gibbs Racing or if he can get that championship with 2311. And if it gets to the point that he thinks he has a better chance of getting a championship at 2311, he might make that switch. But right now, I think his best chance at getting the championship is with Joe Gibbs. And I don't think Denny Hamlin wants to retire until he gets that. So to answer that question, I have to agree. I don't think he's ready to retire just yet. I guess I'll just kind of leave it at that. Jay, you get to wrap this one up.
Yeah, like I said, I'm with you. I don't think, and I know there's a lot of possibilities, things that could change at Joe Gibbs Racing. We've heard Martin Truex say he may retire, depending on this next-gen car. Denny Hamlin, that position he's in. Truex retired. Denny Hamlin has that option, and where he goes. Kyle Busch, we're looking at whether or not there's a sponsor, and that could come into play. I know, Sharon, you said maturity-wise, mm-hmm. maybe Ty Gibbs needs to be down still in the Xfinity Series, and I can't argue that. But if Monster sticks with him, that's a sponsor that comes in. And then Christopher Bell, again, kind of on that hot seat. We saw him get the victory last year, but we've seen that with Joe Gibbs, especially if they got another one in the wings, pulling the plug. So there's a lot of things with Joe Gibbs Racing that could affect a lot of other teams and drivers. We'll have to see how that plays out. But I don't see Denny Hamlin going anywhere. And like I said, I think it's more of a distraction if you're driving for your own team as well as racing for them, racing for the team you own versus having the two separate hats, because then you're wearing them all at the same time versus here you can drive and then focus on that when he needs to. Maybe, again, like I said, maybe he did cross a little bit of a line this weekend. Like I said, if you got a fourth place finish, I don't know how much more distracted you could be or less distracted to get the victory. So I just don't see it as that big a deal. If the team does and wants to address it, you know, maybe we don't hear that no more. But I think there's a lot of other things that these drivers are worried about while they're in there than that.
Okay. We'll let that be the last word. And we are at the top of the hour, actually a minute past the top of the hour. So we'll have to kind of wrap it up here. Chris, we'll start with you. On our roundtable, just give us an idea of what you're, if you're going to be at the racetrack this weekend and what your handles are for social media.
Oh, yeah, of course. You can find us at Wynot Motorsports Park this Saturday night. We'll have our weekly racing series. We look forward to it. I hope that anybody that's around the Meridian, Mississippi area will come and join us. And you can find us every Tuesday night, right, on Race Chat Live. We have a show, me, Taz Taylor, and Craig Moore. We cover all kinds of things racing. It's, you know, I went back, Ms. Sharon, and pulled out an old message. And, you know, this is the show where Steve Billmeyer and I first communicated, and then we went on to build our own show. I've been on this show every year for 8 years now. So that's a little,
wow.
That's amazing how time flies. And of course, Steve and I created a show and Steve passed away and I rebranded the show, which is now Race Chat Live. So we've consecutively gone, for the last 8 years as well. You can find me at Flag of Caution and Chris Creighton, our Yellow Caution flag, on Facebook. But, it's kind of almost a homecoming. This is the show that kind of got me to the next level on the podcasting, and so I appreciate the opportunity to come back on.
That is so cool. Thank you. Okay, Tommy.
At Since95Fan on Twitter. I have been tweeting here recently. I got all my diecasts, so posting the day's date and diecast. Everybody go check it out, follow me, and yeah.
Okay, Jay.
All right, I got to take a deep breath here. Tommy, I saw your tweet on that. That's really cool the way you do that with the diecast. Chris, I'm going to show you how this is done. Let me help you out. Come check out the dirtiest voice in the South at Wynot Motorsports Park, House of Hook, there, Meridian. And I know you helped Artie produce the Southern Dirt Track Report as well as the Race Chat Live. So
that's a show that I've launched, and we've got another show that we're launching too. It's going to be the Jay Dillon Show. So I've
oh
got
my goodness.
Yeah, we're producing the Jay Dillon Show, so I hope he doesn't get me kicked off the air. But we love giving people a chance to look. This is my second phase. You know, I've been in it 10 years, and so it's thank you, Michael, for bringing for bringing that up. I really enjoy Thursday nights with Southern Dirt Track Report.
Oh, wow. The Jay Dillon show, we'll go into that some other time. But I just wanted to comment, you're doing what you mentioned, getting your start here with Sharon, which is where I have. I thank her, or I try to thank her each and every week for that opportunity. And to see you doing that for another other opportunities as for Artie and for Jay Dillon, that's great to see. We talk about that, helping that next generation or somebody else get started and get their feet under them. So kudos on that.
I think I helped you too a little bit there, didn't I, Jay?
You certainly did. You certainly did. I know I haven't been down there much. I barely get to get over to the MAG in Columbus here in town. I'll be in South Carolina at Cherokee this next weekend, so hope you have a good night there at the House of Hook. Sharon, with that, that tells you, I know you got some others that you've mentioned before, but appreciate the opportunity. You can follow me, Michael Hoosman, on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram as the Big Mouth of the Mid-South, the dirtiest voice in the Big Mouth.
Well, one of these days I'm going to have to get Jason Schultz back on the show. He started with us when he was just 15 years old. And he is now a producer for the Dale Jr. Download, and he has his own radio show as well. And I met him at Chicagoland Speedway recently, and he gave me a big hug because he said he learned a lot of things here at Tampa Racing Radio, and that he carried with him to the Dale Jr. Download. He ended up he's from New York. He ended up going to University of North Carolina, graduating from there, and right into the job with Dale Jr. So that's pretty cool. That's how far you guys can go. So we'll see how this continues to develop. But I appreciate you guys. And Chris, I remember you coming on as the yellow caution flag back in the day with Vampire Racing Radio. Gosh, it doesn't seem like it's been 8 years, but wow, that's really cool to know that. And I've enjoyed every time you come on with us. I was just thinking as we were talking here tonight, we need to get you on the show more often, if at all possible. So I'm glad it worked out here tonight. And Jay, I know we've had a little bit of a ride here as well. And Tommy, you're just starting, but you never know what can happen, because I think for me it started when Nick Ficcarelli asked me to be a part of his radio show, and I ended up moving on from that and eventually getting my own radio network at Blog Talk Radio, and it just kind of keeps growing. So we've got, 10 members now as part of our Fan for Racing crew? It's just amazing. So again, Chris, thank you for being here tonight. Jay, I know you filled in as a co-host here tonight. And Tommy, I appreciate Jay filling in as a co-host. And Tommy, I appreciate you being available tonight. I know when Mike and Andy aren't here, it's always great to know that you're a possibility to step in their shoes. So thank you for all that you guys do. I appreciate each and every one of you, as well as our listeners, for tuning in to hear what we have to say. I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter, Fan for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com. Sorry for the audio issues we had earlier in the show. I'm glad that worked out and people were able to tune in. And we will be back on the air this Thursday for our preview show here at fanforracing.com as we preview the races that are coming up at Texas Motor Speedway this coming weekend. So with that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a wrap. Thanks, everybody.
Have a good night.
See y'all later.
Bye, everybody.